originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219 XM 201, and also to those of you listening to our website at www.horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you're able to help, please visit the website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight, a native of Panama, he graduated from the Panamanian Jockey School. He's been leading rider at Hollywood Park, leading rider 3 times each at Calder and Hialeah, and 7-time leading rider at Arlington. He won the 1996 Belmont aboard Editor's Notes and the 2006 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies with Dreaming of Anna. Unfortunately, a horrific spill at Arlington in 2009 left him paralyzed, yet he's found the winner's circle again, now as an owner with the likes of Cultimus Prime and Private Zone. He won 3,587 races as a jockey and over $102 million in earnings. It's an honor to introduce jockey Renee Douglas. Renee, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you, Christine? Thank you.
I am doing great, Renee. It is such a pleasure to have you here with us today, and what a story you have. You're from Panama.
Yes, I am.
And were you born into a racing family?
Yes. My family, All-Star, my grandfather was a famous trainer in Panama. He was a champion trainer there. I was at that age, I was around, 3-4 years old when I started going up, going to a race with my dad. He was from Jamaica, so at some point he went from Jamaica to Panama, and that's how my last name is Douglas. A lot of people get confused that they don't think I'm from Panama, because I don't have a Spanish name, but that he was from Jamaica, so I guess that's how I got the Douglas.
So you started going to the racetrack, you said, at 3 or 4 years of age.
3 or 4 years old, yeah, I started going to the racetrack with my dad, and, but the funny thing is, I didn't care about riding horses. I like horses, to be around horses and to be around that, atmosphere. But I wasn't really, crazy about riding horses, I'll tell you the truth. I was more about, because my dad and all my family, they train horses. So I was more into maybe becoming a trainer, not a jockey. But I guess I didn't really grow up that much, and I was pretty much, small. My father really kind of pushed me a little bit more into being a jockey, and I wasn't happy about it, but, it turned out to be good, I guess.
I'd say so. So you didn't even really... You weren't really excited about the idea of being a jockey, but eventually you attended the jockey school there in Panama, which has a great reputation. And what was it like attending that school?
Well, it is great, really. I tell you, you learn all the fundamental things, you know, in Panama, but you really get to develop more in the United States. And to tell you the truth, Panama is a very small country, and that's what we do. We do, you know, have horse racing and boxing. That's the best two sports there. So we really, they really teach you good how to be a jockey, you know, but you really learn to become a better jockey when you come to the United States, because it's two different racetrack, Christine. I mean, in Panama, it's a small track, and they ride different. So you come over here and you think you in Panama, it doesn't work. You really have to develop how to ride the United, you know, over here, the style of riding here is different, completely different than Panama. So it takes you a little time to get adjusted. But we do have a nice school there. And at that time, we have a different teacher that they have now. And it's 1 year. The hardest part is really like more than 100 jacked kids trying to learn. And only 20, the best 20 get out. So if you're not in those top 20, you have to, or either you drop out or you come back the next year, you know? So you have to be really good to be in the top 20, because only 20 really make it to become a jockey.
Sounds like an extremely competitive program. Yeah. I want to ask you a question about something you mentioned earlier about the riding, different riding styles. How is it different in Panama?
Well, they kind of like, when I was riding there, I have a different mentality. I never like to ride a horse from the gate to the wild. You know what I mean? I always like to save horses to the end. Today and days, it's more like they break out of the gate and they just go. I mean, you know what I'm trying to say? They don't have that timing. And timing in racing is so important. I mean, I always think, you know, the horse got a good move, maybe a good 3-8 move. I never like to use the horse earlier than was supposed to, you know, you're supposed to. And today and days, I see a lot of jockeys already asking the horse and if I able. And it really is, that's my point. I mean, today is different. They ride different. But again, some horses, they last longer now. I mean, I had a little trouble, like when I was in California. I mean, I hate to tell you, from jumping from Panama to California, but when I was riding in California, it took me a little time to adjust there, because over there was jockeys that ride horses, I mean, almost from the gate to the wire, and I was like, why? I mean, how can I ride like that? I mean, there's no way I'm going to win like that. And I mean, you see Patrick Valenzuela, one of those jockeys that really, the horses run for him. And they stay, and they break in front, and they stay in front. It was hard to pass those jockeys like that. And it wasn't my style. I really didn't want to get beat that way, put it that way. You know, going in front too fast, and then at the end somebody beat me, I will really get mad at myself if that happens. So, but understand too, they train that way in California, and the track is faster than California. So, you know, sometimes you don't want to, you know, accept it, but that's the way they run over there, you know. But you go to ride in New York, it's different too. They, you know, they save more. You ride more comfortable in the beginning. And you know, every track is different, Christine. I always think everywhere is different, everywhere you go.
Absolutely correct. No matter if it's New York to California or Panama, they all ride differently. But yes. Let's focus again on the jockey school, Renee. Now, what exactly do you start out? Do you start out grooming horses? What do they teach you from the beginning?
Well, yeah, you basically have your school, but you really have to to learn from your barn. So each jockey have a one barn where you learn how to groom horses and how to do this stuff. And then you got the school. I think you start like 9 o'clock, maybe 1 hour or 2 hours in school, where they teach you more about how to ride horses. So it's, but actually, sometimes you learn more in the barn than the school, because in the barn, they really, you learn from the bottom all the way up. I have two teachers. My father put me with I have the teacher that teach everybody in the school, and I also have another ex-rider, which was an excellent rider, that teach me things too. So actually, I had two teachers, and the funny thing that they're completely two different jockeys. So I really had to, I don't know who to listen to, because they both were so different. And for example, one want me to ride with the whip down, and the other one want me to ride with the whip up. And so I kind of listened to both. And later on in my career, I just decide what was the best, who was right, who was wrong. So it takes time. It takes time, and you don't learn right away. So the more experience you get, it's better for anybody, you know? So that's why you see a lot of kids today and as a buck boy, and either they learn and get better, or sometimes they stay the same. And that was me. I always wanted to improve myself. No matter how many races I win, I always wanted to get better and better, because there's always one guy in front of you that you say, you know what, I had to be better than that one. And to be better than that one, I had to really compete better than him. So I was pushing myself every time more and more and more. So I had that in my mentality, in my mind, always to be better than the guy in front of me. And same thing when I was riding a horse. I always was riding a horse. If it was on the 5-1 and the other one was, 2-1, and I knew I had to beat that one, I'll find a way to beat him. Sometimes it doesn't work, but I had to find a way to beat the other horse. So that's the way I was going, before I ride, and when I was riding, I had to find a way to beat the other horse to win the race. And that's the way I was so successful, myself. I really was I was a very competitive guy, when I was riding. And on top of that, Christine, in those days, not the respect to these jockeys now, but we have so many good riders. I can name you riders, and they're all great. They're not good. They were great. And you have George Velasquez, Angel Cordero, Chris McCarron, Steve Cotton. I can name you hundreds of great riders. And it wasn't easy to win a race. So you really had to really try not to make too many mistakes in the racetrack,
Yeah, ridiculously tough jockey colony back in the day. God, the names you just mentioned, my God.
Oh, man, I can name you riders that you say, wow, Jose Santos, Chris Anley. So many. They weren't good. They weren't good. They were great riders. When I'm talking about great riders, they were great. And unfortunately, you know what? You don't listen. People don't talk about them now. And that really pissed me off because they were so good riders. And it's really, like I said, I can give you a list of riders. They were unbelievable. Unbelievable. You got Steve Cotton. They talk about Steve Cotton. He rode almost all his life in Europe, but he was just a great rider. Steve, one of the best riders I ever rode with was Steve Cotton. Kasha Musin. That guy was amazing. And mean, the rest, you know, the rest one, they were great riders. So to win a race then, it was so hard compared to now, you know what I mean? You know, like when I was in Chicago, I used to win, man, so many races in Chicago. It's not that it was easy, because nothing is easy. You need the horse to get you there. But it was not 10 years before when I was riding with, you know, when I was riding in Calder. Actually, every top rider in the around the United States, they usually come out from Calder Racetrack. This is where the good jockeys start, in Calder Racetrack. They used to, not now, but used to. All those top riders, they started in Calder in those days. I'm talking about maybe 15 years back, you know, in the 90s.
And when you rode in Panama for a year and a half after graduating from the jockey school, and then when you first arrived to the States, that's where you started at Calder?
So when I became a jockey in Panama, I wasn't good. I started too early. I started when I was like 13 or 14 years old. So I only weighed 70, 80 pounds. So I was too young. I was too young to become a jockey. But like I say, it was. I had a brother that was assistant trainer here in the United States for trainer Bill Hembrick. I don't know if you know him, Bill Hembrick.
Mm-hmm.
Used to train maybe 50, 60 horses in those days. And he was based in Louisiana, in Fairground, Louisiana, in a farm, but he was in Fairground. And I got a contract with him when I came to the United States, and I was riding for him. But for some reason, I went out of the contract. I didn't want to be in Louisiana. I want to go to New York, and I want to go to those big places. And he let me out, and I moved to New York. In New York, I did good as a buck boy, but it happened that there was a jockey there as a buck boy. His name is Declan Murphy. I don't know if you know him or you heard about him. His name was Declan Murphy. He was a really good rider too, very good rider. And so the competition wasn't that easy, because he already have all the business. But I made one big mistake, and it was on those days Robbie Davis was becoming. He was a buck boy too, and he was becoming how you call when you lost your buck, you become a
journeyman,
professional, I guess.
Yeah.
And he wanted to take my book, and I don't know why. Somehow my father or picking another a different agent. And I think if I would have that agent, in those days it was Steve Adika. I don't know if you know him, Steve Adika. In those days he was probably the best agent up there. So I didn't get him, and I had a different agent, which was good, but I think if I would make the other move, I would win more races in those days. But I lost my buck. I did good as a buck. Like I say, I was maybe second best buck boy there after Murphy. And then for some reason, I don't know why, I decided to move. I moved to Philadelphia Park in those days. And I went to Philadelphia Park for 1 year. And I didn't find myself. I don't know if I just didn't like it there, or I wanted to do really good, and I just decided to move back to Panama. I went to Panama to clear my mind, and I stayed in Panama for like a year doing nothing.
Really?
Maybe I rode there. Maybe I'm not sure. It was so long, but I just to clear my mind. I was just I wasn't happy. And then from there, I made a big move from there. I went right to California. For some reason, I said, well, I'm going to California. And everybody was like, where, California? Yeah, I'm going. I went to California. And I did good in California, but I was too young to, again, I was 17 years old, probably. And I did good, but then California is a place that you go up and down, you know. One day you're on top, and the next day you're in the bottom. So and a lot of people say, well, stay there, don't leave. And I don't know why, but I used to move a lot. I don't know. I never was happy in a place that I feel like they don't give me the opportunity. You know, I just say, well, if they don't want me now, why make me think that they will want me later? That's the way I was thinking. So from there, California, I stayed maybe a couple of years, and then I moved to Florida. That's how I became a living writer there. And things was different after that. You know, things got better after I became a writer, a lean writer in Florida. People see you differently, you know?
Jackie Renee Douglas joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Renee, I attended Chris McCarron's jockey school, and he, of course, mentioned how you beat him on Skipaway number of times, but he always mentioned that Hialeah was his favorite racetrack because it was such a beautiful place, and you had the flamingos, they would fly away, and it was just a beautiful place, apparently. Did you share that same feeling?
Yes, I did. I think it was one of my favorite racetracks for sure, yeah. But again, it was a different era. You know, like, I think in those days where Chris McCarron were talking about being in Hialeah, in those days it was different than in my days. You know, the old Hialeah. The older Hialeah, when McCarron and those guys used to ride there, there was the competition was, you know, I mean, you had the top horses and top jockeys there. So, of course, he's going to feel that way, because I feel the same way when I was riding at Del Mar, because, you know, I was with the best. I always felt good when I was riding with the best. I like to ride with the best jockeys and the best horses, because it will make, you know, I don't know, it was something about me that really want me to ride so bad. I mean, I want to get to the race so I can just ride and compete, you know, than riding in different racetrack. But in those days, Chris McCarron was talking about, of course, I heard a lot of good things about that racetrack. I mean, he's got a great memories. In those days, he's talking about the best of the best was in Hialeah. They usually go from New York and they go to ride to Hialeah, ride that meet in Hialeah. But this beautiful racetrack, there's no question about it. When I was there, I mean, I won so many races there, and they really, I can't forget Hialeah, honestly. I think I had, if I don't make mistake, I think I had the record of most jockey won races in 1 year.
Wow.
So Hialeah is a special place. But I would have loved to ride in those days that Chris McCarron was talking about. I'm pretty sure it was much different than when I was riding there. I mean, the competition, it wasn't the same as when they were riding. I mean, all the top horses that were there. I mean, you got great horses that would go to Hialeah and run there. You know? And I would have loved to ride in those years.
As you mentioned,
it wasn't my time in those days. Not that I'm calling Chris old, but
I won't tell him you said that.
I'm pretty sure he's got that right. I mean, everybody that I talk to, you know, they think Hialeah has got a special place in their heart, you know. So, you know, I'm with them.
Well, and you had great success there in Florida, as I mentioned during the introduction. You were leading.
And you heard that from my great rider too, Chris McCarron, who was one of my favorite riders. So he was a He was a great rider boy. You know what? Now you're talking about Chris McCarron. When I first went there in California, in Santa Anita meet, I finished second or third lean rider, and I was taking a shower. And you can ask him, but maybe you remember. Yeah, I was taking a shower actually I wasn't by myself, and he came to me, and he was taking a shower himself too, and told me, you know, he shook my hand, and he said, you know what, congratulations. I said, well, for what? I didn't win the standings. And he said, you know, to finish third, second or third here, you have to be a really good rider. And I congratulate him for that. So, you know, I said, thank you. I said, hear that from a guy like you, it really means a lot to me. So he showed you there the respect. And those, you know, I wish there would be more jockeys, you know, like Chris McCarron. I'm telling you, he's a classy guy, and he really mean it. When he shake my hand, he really mean it. And that made me feel really good, you know, coming from him.
He definitely did. You've mentioned so many great names, of course, on this show here. Who, when you first moved to the States and you're watching these American riders and you're trying to adjust to the American way of riding, who did you look at the most and maybe try to copy their style, look similar? Who did you look up to the most?
Honestly, you want to know the truth? Nobody.
Nobody?
No. I always wanted to be myself. I always wanted to have my own style. I always wanted to be myself. I wanted to win races like them. I wanted to accomplish things like Pinkay, Chris McCarron, and those jockeys. But I never wanted to be like them. You'll never find another Chris McCarron. You never will find another Pinkay. You know what I mean? They were unique. And I never wanted to be like them. I always had my own style. Of course, I watched them, how they ride horses, how they, you know, but style-wise, no, I didn't want to be like them. You know, everybody has their own style. You know, I never want to be like, oh, I want to look like Rafiko. I want to look like this one. No. I always wanted to look myself. I have my own style, and I always trying to be myself. But, of course, I wanted to win races like that. Like, they will, you know, win those kind of races. But, never wanted to be somebody else.
We will continue our visit with jockey Rene Douglas after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Penna of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcotte. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too. And I thank you.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
And dreaming of Anna's ass to kick for home, and she does so willingly, but Octave in the blue colours down at the rail is looming the danger. Appealing Zofie in the white cap, hanging tough, and Cotton Blotham on the grandstand side. Four of them line up as they pass the 300. Now it's dreaming of Anna and Octave, but Octave is catching her stride for stride down the centre. Dreaming of Anna digs deep. She calls on all her class. Octave can't get to her, and Dreaming of Anna and Rene Douglas have taken the Breeders' Cup Juvenile a length and three quarters. Octave a game second. Cotton Blossom finished up third, and Appealing Zofie was fourth.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Rene Douglas. Rene, what do you feel when you hear that replay?
Oh, I get chills. I get a lot of good memories. Yeah, it was a beautiful race. I think in all my career, I think I studied two races. So much. One was the Belmont Stakes, winning on editor's note, and this one, Dreaming of Anna. Because if you see that race, if you pay attention, she was very nice filly actually for Frank Calabrese, trainer Wayne Catalano. Mm-hmm. She had a soft mouth. I mean, it's not a horse that you can take a lot of hold of her. So you need to give him a nice break out of the gate. She was so fast out of the gate, but if you push him a little bit, that was you will lose the race because she really take off on you. So you have to kind of ride it with finesse. And I broke on top and I stayed wide a little bit because, I want to drop in right in that corner, right in the first turn, and then I slow her down. And if you see behind me, it was jockey Gary Gomez on Top Pleasure filly, which probably was, I don't know if she was the best in the race or what, but I happened to slow my horse down and make him slow down too, because he was right behind me and he had no place to go and to turn it for home and to the apron probably. But by that time, when I threw my horse loose, I had that horse left, so he couldn't catch up on me. So that's probably what made me win the race, because I make him stay behind me and box him the whole way around. And that's what happened. You know, when he turned it for home, I asked my filly, she just take off too. So I knew my filly would win if they let me go slow in the beginning. So if they would have chased me early, and there's no way I would have won that race. So that's how you win races, you know what I mean? Sometimes you have to have luck in the race too. But I was lucky enough that Gary Gomez, he was trying to follow me, but I never turned my horse loose into the apron. So that was a good race.
It was a masterful ride, Rene. I loved when you took a quick peek around your shoulder turning for home, and then you dropped down to the rail, and then it seemed like to me when you hit her left-handed, really when she responded. Yeah.
When Gomez horse trying to pass me, I have a lot of horse left, like I say. So, but what made me win the race, it was the pace that I had a chance to slow him down the whole way, slow her down. So that was a good race that I said, you know what, I probably won that race. You know, sometimes that makes you feel good, you know, when you come back and say, you know what, I won the race. You know, it makes you feel better that you did a good job, you know, especially in those kind of races.
Well, and how about editor's note? I think that you can definitely take credit for that one as well. And what a stretch run. My gosh, that was exciting. I can't imagine being in the middle of it. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she was nice,
really,
too.
Editor's note, of course, trained by Dwayne Lucas. And when did you know you had the race won, the Belmont Stakes with Editor's Note?
Oh, my God. The Editor's Note. Okay. With editors, no, I tell you what. Editors, no. I was running in California. I think that was 96, I think. Gary Steven was writing editor's note. It was a very good horse, but it was more on the chicken side. You know what I mean? I don't know if you, the term that says chicken side, it means that he likes to finish more second than win. You know what I mean? He would hate to pass the last horse. And I told you, Christine, I never studied a tape or a horse more than that, than editors know, because Gary Steven grabbed me. Unfortunately, Gary Steven couldn't, unfortunately for him, but for me it was good because I won the Belmont State. But he was supposed to ride the horse, and I think he got hurt or he had surgery or something like that. And I was riding for Wayne Lucas. I rode for Wayne Lucas in the Preakness, a horse called Victor Speech. And I finished fourth or fifth, I'm not sure, I finished fifth, I think. And I rode him very good. And he told me, he said, well, Gary Steven was riding Editor's Note, but, you know, he can ride him. And I'm looking for a strong rider, and I don't think there's no one better than you. That's why he told me straight up like that. I said, I would love you to ride a horse. I said, of course I'll ride a horse. I said, oh, man, geez, it's the Belmont. He said, but you really have to ride him hard. I mean, this horse needs a very strong rider like you. I said, okay. I said, no problem. So, but I had no idea. And I said, okay. I was happy that he gave me the mount on the horse. And then Gary Steven grabbed me and said, you know, Rene, this horse is a chicken. I hate to say that way. He's a chicken. I mean, he's got what it takes to win, but he hates to pass the horse in front of him. And I said, okay, I'm going to check his races. So I went back home and I checked his races, and every race he ran, I check him and I look, and he runs with the head high, and he kind of sideway, and he was a horse that, it's not a comfortable horse to ride, but I had no choice. I had to ride him, right? So going into that race, I was just so concentrated in that race that I say, the only thing I was worried about, passing the last horse. So I had to time it. I had to time it perfect. Otherwise, I would lose the race. I had to time it perfect. So going to the race, I broke, and I just, it's a mile and a half. And so, you know, I just decided to stay back. And it's a big horse. So going to the back stretch, she started moving really nice, so I'm passing horse by horse. But I'm concentrating on what I'm gonna do after the 3-8 home. I don't care about the beginning of the race. I knew at some point he's gonna start rolling. It's just how I'm gonna pass the last horse. So what really made me win the race, but I think Jose Santo was riding his skip away. I think he was riding skip away. And Jose Santos, another strong rider.
McCarron was riding skip away.
No, I think it was Jose Santos.
Maybe.
Jose Santos was riding skip away in the Belmont. For trainer Sonny Hine. And when my horse started making the move, and you can see in the three, by the half a mile, horse start moving really nice. But I can't turn him loose. I had to wait. And for some reason, I said, when I'm ready to pass the last horse, that's where I had to do anything but win. I had to win the race somehow. I don't know how, but I'm gonna have to win the race, because I ain't gonna finish second in the Belmont Stakes. I'm telling you. I mean, that's the way I was thinking. I ain't gonna finish second today. And as you see, he's passing. Jose Santos made a move, maybe a little bit too early, I think. But maybe he thought that he had the horse to do that. So, but which he helped me, because I wanted to have a horse in front of me, at least into the apron. And when my horse started moving, he's moving like he's going to win, and you can see he stayed there. He refused to pass the other horse. The other horse come back on me. I said, oh, my God. I said, I'm going to finish second? No way. And you can see right there, the best thing I did there is switch to hit the horse left-handed. Because when I did that and I hit him so hard, the horse got out. When I hit him, he got out maybe two lanes, and that probably my horse didn't get to see the other horse inside. And that's how I won the race. And, I'm talking about a race. It's just like, I guess that was meant to be for me that day. So, but it wasn't easy to ride a horse. It was very hard to ride that horse because he carried the head high. I couldn't ride him really control because I couldn't really fix my saddle because he was a kind of happy horse going into the gate. So every time you move, he will jump and stuff like that. So I was riding kind of short. I didn't feel comfortable at all, but who cares? I was just trying to win the race.
Hey, you won the Belmont, right? That's all that matters.
That was one of probably the best, you know, one of the best thing happened to me, you know, win that race. You know, that's one of Jackie's dream, right? Win one of the Triple Crown. So.
Jockey Rene Douglas joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Rene, let's talk a minute about, go back to our previous conversation. You were riding at Hialeah and Calder, leading rider there three times. And then when did you decide and why did you decide to go to Chicago?
Oh, my God. For some reason, I started doing bad again. I don't know, just at one point, I was doing bad. I didn't like to do bad. I like to win races. I always wanted to win. And again, if I feel that people don't want me and their horses, I would say, well, they don't want me now. Why would they want me later? So that's the way I always think. So I said, well, you know what? I gave him a chance. I gave him enough chance. Maybe I gave him one month or 2 months to see if business pick up. But if you know, and then I have to do something. Now I can stay there, you know, watching all the riders winning and me doing nothing. So this agent came to the jockey's room and said, you know, would you like to go to Chicago? And Christine, believe me, not the respect, he passed away already, but I didn't even. He wasn't a good agent. Maybe in those 50 years back, I don't know. He was an agent he was in jail or something like that for a long time. And he came back, and I guess he got out and wanted to be an agent. And I don't know how he find me, but I said, yeah, I'll go. He told me so many good stories that I said, okay, I'll go. And I decided to go. I just he told me in the right time because I was down. I wanted to leave, and I moved. I left, and I went to Harton. In those days, I don't think Arlington was open. I'm not sure, but I know it was in Arlington. And I went to Harton, and I didn't like it at all. So it was Harton in Sportman. And I did good. I was riding for Bersonier in those days. And so I did good. Good riders there on those days, too. Was Shane Seller and Early Fires. But I didn't like it. I hated that town where I was. It was this former bar in Harton, and I think it was Cicero or something like that. I didn't like it at all. It was terrible. And I left. I moved. I don't know where I moved after that, but I left. I didn't stay there. I don't even finish the year there. So I moved out of there. And I think I went back to Florida. I'm not sure exactly where I went. But I had a bad memories in Chicago. So when people said Chicago, I said, no, I ain't going back there. But I never rode Arlington Park. It was just so different. And so I happened to be in Arlington after that, right, a few years later. And that's the best thing that happened to me, I think. I think Chicago is not only did I accomplish so many things, I made good friends there that today and day is one of my best friends.
7-time leading rider at Arlington. Renee, that's a record breaker right there. That's pretty impressive. And that's where you stayed. So what was it? Was it different? You said every racetrack was different to ride at. What was different about Arlington?
Arlington was the turf. I love to ride the turf, Chrissy. It's something about the turf. It's like a horse when step to the turf and they say, wow, he run. You know, that was me. When I ride the turf, it was like Disney World. I don't know, what can I say? I love to ride the turf. And it's only few racers that have the turf, like, you know, I don't say better than Arlington, because I really think Arlington has the best turf in the United States. But I love to ride in Arlington Park. It was something about that track. There was like the people there. It's so nice. The kids, there's so many kids going to racetrack. And it makes me feel good when I was riding there, honestly. I really enjoy riding there. It was 5 months, but I only stayed there in the summer. But it was the best 5 months that I feel happy. And that's what all that matters to me. I like to be happy in one place. You know, I like California, and I like, you know, but California, California is a place that they change a lot, and I wanted to be in Chicago. The only thing interesting that they really, you can pick up dairy horse or something like that, because, you know, they in Chicago they really don't have those 2-year-olds that you really wanted to ride in those big races, you know, going to the Breeders' Cup and stuff like that. So, but I enjoy Chicago every minute. So I have great friends there, like I say, and I rode a lot of top horses there, and put a lot of top trainers that really, I enjoy it. I enjoy riding there.
Jockey Renee Douglas joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Renee, unfortunately, in 2009, you suffered a horrific spill, left you paralyzed from the waist down. First and foremost, how are you doing now?
I'm doing good. You know, that day changed my life. You know, everything changed, you know. I didn't want it to end that way, but, you know, it's life and nothing you can do. I'm doing good. You know, I challenge, you know, it's a different challenge. You know, I had to live every day and do therapy 3 times a week and trying to stay positive. But, of course, you need to be around your friends and your family, you know. It's not easy being in this situation, but you have to think positive all the time and you know, continue life. What are you going to do?
I want to take a second here, Renee, to talk about the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. They help you out, and they help out, I believe it's 60 other permanently disabled riders who are in a very similar situation to yourself. And it is such an important organization to our sport here. These other riders have given everything to the sport. So again, folks, if you're able to help, please donate. Please go to the website at pdjf.org. So Renee, you said you like to stay active, and I want to talk. I can't believe this hour is flying by so quickly. But before we go, I want to talk about you have owned several very successful racehorses, and tell us about your history as an owner.
Well, you know, after my accident, I was in the hospital. I stayed in the hospital, you know, maybe 6-7 months. I don't know. But during the hospital, I have all my good friends. There are about 6 good friends there. One is a doctor, the other one is a judge, and the other one owns a restaurant. So there are about six guys. They're really, really, they were there almost every day with me during those 6 months. And they own horses too, but they never own top horses, put it that way. It's hard to get a good horse. And I say to them when I was in the hospital, I say, you know what? I'm gonna get you a good horse. And I'm gonna put a group with all you guys, and I'm gonna get a good horse. And you know, they say, okay, I think they say, oh, yes, just trying to, you know, keep me maybe busy or something like that. Because, you know how hard to, how many people say, oh, yeah, I'm going to get you a good horse, and you get a good horse. It's not that easy, you know. And the first horse I got, we paid $60,000 for him. It was a horse called Golden Mocha. It was a Canadian horse, and run 3 times in Panama. And I sent it to Brian Lynch, which is a good friend of mine, which is a great trainer too. And I told Brian, I said, Brian, will you train this horse for me? He said, of course. And so I sent the horse to him, and he has some, you know, I think he got sick or something like that. So we couldn't run him earlier in one of those races, big races. So it took him like 5 months to get him back running. And we put him right, in the 500,000 race. And you know that race in Irwin? How you call that track? Not Woodbine, the other one.
Fort Erie.
Yeah, they got a big race there, the 500,000. And the horse is a sprint horse. He never been run more than 3/4. That day was, I think it was mile 16 or mile 8, I'm not sure. And he ran that race and we won. First race we ever won. He won the 500,000 for us. So you imagine, first horse we bought, first horse we ran, and uh-huh. We won the 500,000. So that was unbelievable. And unfortunately the horse, he died. And after that, I said to them, I said, you know what, it's a horse in Panama my brother has. And they couldn't get him. I think he's a really good horse, but he hasn't been good because I see things that I like to bring him back here and start from zero. So he was a horse that I don't think they teach him right. I don't know what happened with him, but he had bad habits. You know, he wants to put the brake. He would run and he would be running and he put the brakes on. He would do things. I mean, put it this way, I have friend of mine, they say, you know what, I wanted to go to see Private Son run because we didn't know what the hell he was going to do when he runs. Sometimes he jumped the fence, sometimes he stop and don't run. I mean, he was just, and he wasn't crazy, just bad habits. And but when he wins, and he wins good. And I said to my brother, I said, you know what, let me buy this horse from you. He said, well, I said, are you sure you want to? I said, yeah, I like to buy that horse from you. He said, well, let me run it one more time, and then I'll buy it. I said, okay, then you can buy it. He ran, and I think he was in front, and he put the brakes, and he refused to run. So for me to buy a horse like that, everybody thought I was crazy. Everybody said, how can you buy a horse like that? He'll be running, he put the brakes. So short story, I bought the horse and became private son. As a private son from Panama.
That's amazing, Renee. So, we only have 2 minutes left here on the show, but he went on to win 6 graded stakes
graded
for you.
Stake. He won 2 Basper. I think he has the record winning 2 Basper. He won one of my best races. I say to them, I said, we want to win the cigar. We won the cigar. And I said to them, I said, you know what? We're going to win. If this horse is right, we're going to win this 4-4 ago. Because he was his best, I think his best distance was 7-8, maybe a mile. And it's not many races that have a 1 mile turn. And the 4 ago in Saratoga was 1 mile. And we won the 4 ago. So he was a special horse. He's a horse that his heart was bigger than him. Put it that way. His heart, he refused to get beat. If a horse come to him, he refused to get beat. And the race that it really hurts me to this day was the Breeders' Cup, because in 2015 when Ron Happy beat us, and our horse likes to stay, whoever stay next to him, they won't beat him. He keeps running. You can't beat him. And that happened. Martin Pedrosa, it was a horse in front. It was 20-1 horse or something like that. And Martin was laying second, and then he happened to be in front with him. And turning for home, he stayed with the horse that was in front, the launch shot, and the other horse stopped. So when he stopped, our horse started, you know, looking around, me, waiting for a competition. Then Ron Happen came way outside of us.
Renee,
by the time he saw him, it was too late. Yeah,
bad beat there. Unfortunately, Renee, we are all out of time. We could talk to you for 2 hours, I think. But thank you so much for joining us tonight, Renee.
Thank you, Christine. Thank you for everything, and I appreciate it.
Hey,
thank you.
Special shout out to Will for the idea of having Renee Douglas as a guest tonight. Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For producer Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thanks for listening.